Welcome to the Boneyard with Steve Robertson. As always, I am your good friend and host, Steve Robertson, here on the Maroon Friday edition of the Yard. I went to baseball today. We'll talk a little bit about that. So I'm recording a little bit later. It's been a couple days removed from our loss to Alabama. We will briefly spend a little time talking about that, but we'll look ahead to Missouri. A lot of things are happening, as you guys are well aware. Big weekend for Bulldog basketball, for sure. I want to spend a little time, too, talking about the Ron Polk Ring of Honor class. I have written about all three of these individuals in books over the years. I think all of them in Alpha Dogs. I know Mike Proffitt was part of Villains and Alpha Dogs. But Mike Proffitt, a pitcher from, 69 to 72. Ted Milton, of course, here from 68 to 71. One of the cogs of some of Paul Gregory's finest teams, and of course, Mitch Moreland, the incomparable Mitch Moreland. I'm a huge fan of this Ron Polk Ring of Honor thing. One of the things that I think we do an excellent job of doing is remembering those who laid the foundation for what we now enjoy. I want to talk a little bit about Ted Yard Dog Milton for a bit. This guy was hitting home runs when home runs weren't cool, man. You know, it was a much different game back then. Yard Dog, I tell you, I had so many people when I wrote about him. When I wrote Villains, I had people that come up, you know, when I write those collections of stories, and everybody has ideas. You know, hey, Steve, you should talk to so-and-so or so-and-so. And at times I have people that volunteer and say, hey, I'd love to tell you about this. And maybe it doesn't strike my fancy, or maybe I'm just not ready to include that. We'll do another one of those books in the next few years. But nobody got mentioned more to me during the Villains book tour than Ted Milton. And I didn't know a lot about him. I knew the name. But I have grown to know him and to love him as a person and as a Bulldog. And I had the chance to text him directly once it was announced and just told him how proud I was of him. And so humble, so incredibly humble. Coach is like, you know, Steve, I'm so honored and humbled because there's so many great Mississippi State players. And he's right about that, but Ted's one of them. And after Ted finished up his playing days, he went into high school coaching. And he coached many of you, or he coached your dads, or he coached your coaches. Anybody who knows anybody in South Mississippi coaching circles know Coach Milton. But, meaner than a yard dog, man. And he's told me some great stories over the years, some that I can share, some that I can't. But I'm so incredibly proud to have gotten to know Ted Milton these last few years and to see him be recognized as one of the greatest players in the history of our baseball program. And listen, we still got some work to do. I was hoping that we'd get Willie Mitchell in this year. That didn't work out. But, maybe next year. You know, I think the Buddy Meyer thing hurt us a little bit last year that nobody came. But I can tell you, Willie Mitchell's granddaughter comes to every Mississippi State home football game and a lot of baseball games too. So I know that the Mitchell family will be represented. So while we came short of getting our goal this year with Willie, we hope to get it done next year. I mean, none of us are getting any younger. And reality of it is that Saunders Ramsey and his group have a nearly impossible job just picking a handful of guys each year to go into that Ron Polk Ring of Honor because, let's be honest about it, we've got a back catalog of studs. And pretty soon, you're going to have some of those John Cohen-era players that did some incredible things that have become eligible for induction. We're not too many years removed from maybe Hunter Renfroe, you know, being a guy that'll go in. And he was a star at a time of the dead baseball era and dead bat era in college baseball. But what an incredible pro career he's had. And so, yeah, we've got some work to do. We still got, I think, about a half dozen guys, the legacy type guys that we've got to get in. And Mike Proffitt, man, I tell you, I've gotten to trade some messages over the years with his beautiful daughter and, his wife. Matter of fact, I kind of had an idea Mike was going in. His wife messaged me and said, have you heard when they're going to do, what weekend that's going to be? I thought, well, that's probably a hint and a half for me right there that Mike's going in. I tell you a great story about Mike Prophet that many of you don't know. Mike Prophet, so let me tell you a little backstory. 1970, the 1970 Mississippi State baseball team was the best in the country. And it really wasn't up for much debate. And I wrote about this in Start Villains. I had a chance to interview Brantley Jones, the chapter, The Legend of the Double Bird. And Brantley Jones, Jocko Potts, and others were a part of a senior class. They kind of got caught up in the bureaucracy of the NCAA. And so the SEC was challenging the rule on 3 years of eligibility. Because you remember, for decades, freshmen couldn't play varsity sports. And so the SEC was challenging that. And so we played the entire year with the assurances of the SEC office that everything is going to be fine. Well, when we got ready to go to Gastonia, North Carolina for the Division III NCAA tournament, they ruled our seniors ineligible. That included Dennis and Brantley. And so two of our three weekend starters were not able to pitch in Gastonia. And we still nearly, I guess it was Florida State, we still nearly won the regional with Prophet kind of carrying it. And of course, Prophet comes back in 71. We win the SEC championship for the second straight year, and we get to Omaha for the first time ever. We went from being a great Southern baseball program to being a national program under the direction of Coach Paul Gregory. Of course, Polk came in, took things to another level, in no way diminishing Polk's legacy, none whatsoever. I just don't think that this modern generation of fans truly appreciates what Paul Gregory did for us. And for those of you that don't know, I have a picture of Paul Gregory that sits on my desk every day, right next to a picture of me signing at Lemuria. I'm looking at it right now. A signed picture of Coach Paul Gregory when he was with the White Sox. And so I share that with you because, you know, Paul Gregory is in the Ring of Honor, and deservedly so. But he really kind of laid the groundwork. Like, you know, duty retires. Gregory had been hired as the coach in waiting. And to kind of tell you how we kind of preferred baseball over basketball even back then. And if you read the dude, you know, after the Bilbo Purge of 1930, we didn't even field a men's basketball team. Probably the most inexpensive team to field in college athletics is men's basketball, and we didn't do it. We had football and baseball, but no basketball team. And so we hired Paul Gregory to coach the basketball team, even though he had no experience coaching basketball. He played basketball, but he hadn't coached it. And listen, it was terrible. It was. But he was basically just down the hallway. So whenever we got ready to make a move, when Duty got ready to make a move and bring in a new coach, we had a coach in waiting. Yeah. When Doc Patey got ready to retire, we had somebody ready to go. And then Gregory comes in, does a great job, and really built the roster up. And it was mainly Southern kids. I mean, it was mainly guys from Birmingham and Memphis and all over Mississippi and a few guys over in Louisiana. And we were mainly a border recruiting state. And Paul Gregory took us to Omaha for the first time. Didn't work out the way we wanted to, but Prophet was a big part of that. And then in 72, Mike Prophet was the winningest pitcher in the Southeastern Conference. It was Jeff Brantley who showed up at Mississippi State that broke many of Mike Prophet's records. That's how significant Mike Prophet is to Mississippi State baseball. And then, of course, Mitch Moreland. And I wrote about this yesterday. You know, the image that you all probably have of Mitch Moreland is the same one that I have. And that's him getting the big swing and miss against Clemson in the 07 Super Regional to get us back to Omaha, man, for the first time in forever. And it had been way too long since we'd been to Omaha. And it's like, yes, we finally got back. We're finally back in Omaha where we belong, where we deserve to be. And Mitch was a two-way guy, obviously a guy that was a big hitter and a great pitcher here at Mississippi State. You know, that's kind of the old Polk model, right? You had those guys coming to work as closer. You would be Bobby Thigpen, Pete Young, Mitch Moreland. I remember Mitch had a chance to interview Mitch in Alpha Dogs. We talked a little bit about that extra inning game that he basically pitched until he just basically fell apart, won the game. Pulkey goes out there, take the ball from him, and he goes, I'm not giving the ball up. I'm staying in the game. Stayed in the game, won the game. And Mitch, of course, played what it does in 13 years, wins the World Series championship with the Red Sox, spent a lot of years with the Rangers. So, yeah, it's a great class, man. I know many of you only know the Mitch Moreland name, but I can tell you, Prophet and Yard Dog, they are just as deserving as Mitch Moreland, even though they didn't have the Major League Baseball career that Mitch did. And let's be honest, you know, Mitch, we needed a superstar during that stretch. We had some really good teams. I think about, you know, that group, you know, the Mitch Moreland group, the Jeff Butts group, the the Brad Corley group, the Brian Lanenfa group, Brad Jones. So many great players on that era. I know I'm leaving somebody out, and somebody will text me, you know. But the reality of it is among that group of stars, Mitch Moreland probably shone the brightest. And so I know that so many of his teammates will be there to celebrate Mitch. And that many of you of a younger generation are learning about the great Ted Milton and the great Mike Prophet for the first time. If you read my books, you've read about them before, but I am so incredibly glad that Saunders Ramsey and that group, listen, guys, it's a thankless job. And I'm thanking them now, you know, for what they've done to kind of put this thing and really bring some dignity to it. It's not like, hey, let's just kind of draw names out of a hat and things will be okay. Now, Joe Deere and those guys are involved in that committee. They do a great job. And again, it's an almost impossible task, especially as guys begin to age, because you think, man, I want to be able to get guys in here so they're alive to see it, like we were with Frank Montgomery and so many others. You want the player to be there to talk about what it meant. Dale Unser, you know how great that was. And so you run that risk. You know, every year the clock's ticking away, and there's going to be a great player at some point that doesn't get in until after he's passed away. And I know that's one of the things they're trying to avoid. And so it's a tough job. So Saunders, on behalf of a very grateful Mississippi State family, thank you for all you and that committee do each and every year to kind of make this thing special for all of us. All right, let's thank our friends at Bulldog Burger Company, longtime sponsors of the show. Man, I love Bulldog Burger Company. I probably will have it for dinner this evening, maybe. If not today, certainly tomorrow. I need some Bulldog Burger Company in my life, and so do you. I like consistency, right? When I order out or I go out, I don't want to come home disappointed and say, oh, it was an off night. You know, you never get that at Bulldog Burger Company. Things are great. The Eat With Us group knows exactly what they're doing. They know how to feed folks. So when you are maybe having a lunch with work colleagues or friends or family or an evening out with a special someone, look no further than Bulldog Burger Company. There's always something for everybody on the menu, as well there should be. You know, you go there for the hamburgers, but there's other items that you can choose from. If you're not feeling a burger tonight, and everybody else is, you can have that BLT salad. I prefer it grilled. You may like it fried. But find your own favorites at Bulldog Burger Company. Have the spring rolls as your appetizer. They'll make you and everybody around you better looking. It's true. It's in writing. As we write these things down, they become true. Right? When I write them down, they become true. And some of you know the reference. Some of you don't. All that understood, three great locations to serve you: University Drive in Star Vegas, Gloucester Street there in Tupelo, Lake Harbor Drive in the Ridge and Flowood area. Be sure and go check them out today. Bulldog Burger Company, the place where people go to meet, M-E-A-T. All right, a couple days have passed, so we're not going to have some prolonged eulogy about the men's basketball game. It was a great game. I mean, it really was. And it's so frustrating, man. I know you guys feel like I do. We've proven we can play with anybody. Well, maybe without, except Auburn, maybe. But we just haven't been able to get that signature SEC win. You know, you had that big win over Pitt. You felt really good about that. You know, maybe they were a tad overrated. But, man, it's like we know we're a good team. And I still think we can be a very dangerous team, but man, we really needed that win. Really needed to get both this week. And yeah, it's pretty safe to say Josh Hubbard's out of his slump, right? Career night for Josh. I saw some people complaining about officiating. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought they let him play on both ends. There were a couple times that Cam could have got called for over the back. He didn't get called. But, man, it goes down to – and listen, I give Chris Jans a lot of credit. He said in postgame, the first thing he did is go out there and tell Keyshawn Murphy, this is not on you. And he's right about that. It seems to be magnified in the moment because the moment was so big. You heave that thing home, State gets the lead, you got a chance to close this thing out. But how many times do we talk about it? What is your game management in the final 2 minutes? At 2 minutes to go, we're down one after a Josh Hubbard jumper. And then we get a turnover, right? Mark Sears turns the basketball over. Minute 30, we miss a shot, don't get the rebound. And it felt like this last couple minutes, we just had a tough time getting the looks that we wanted. It's like we wanted to make the big shot. Sears comes back, who's been outstanding, makes it a three-point game right at a minute to go. And then Murphy, nice little move there, drops it in, makes it a one-point game. So here we go. Call a timeout, 48 seconds, trailing by one. We get Kugel in, we get Jones in, and Sean's a really good rebounder, really good on the ball defender, not the best offensive option, but there's a role for him on our team. And we get a foul, and Grant Nelson goes to the line. I didn't really like the foul, but I understood why they called it. Well, he misses both of them. Or was it both or is it a one and one? He misses a free throw, and we can't get a rebound. So we're down one on defense, and we got a foul. I mean, it's just it's nuts how this thing is going to play out here. So, yeah, he missed both free throws. Yeah, he missed the first one, missed the second one, and we give up the rebound, and it's like, we get the best case scenario. They don't score, but then we give up an offensive board. We end up having a foul. Good decision to foul who we did. He misses the first one, and we get the rebound. So despite all of that, despite the fact that we fouled when we shouldn't have, we didn't get an offense, a defensive rebound, here we are. 21 seconds to go, down one with the ball. And this is the big shot. And Keyshawn misses it. 13 seconds to play. You hate it so much for the kid that's played so well, but you have to make it. You have to make it. We end up fouling, and they make a couple free throws, makes it a three-point game, and we get it into Hubbard, and we dribble it off our leg. And that's the game. That's the game. I mean, you play all these minutes, you put in all this effort, and you put yourself in a position to win it late, and you weren't able to do it. We haven't managed end-of-game scenarios well this year in the SEC. We haven't. You can say what you want to, but the proof is in the numbers, and the proof is in the results. We didn't, and let's be honest about it, we didn't manage end-of-game against Ole Miss well either. Had to go to overtime. We didn't manage end of South Carolina game well either. Had to go to overtime. And so there's some game management things we can do better on both sides. But, again, it hurts so bad. And, listen, I got no doubt that Alabama would have scored again. Like, even if Keyshawn heaves that thing home, it's still 13 seconds to play. They're a great team, great offensive team. And our defensive numbers have dropped dramatically.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Wondering if dangerous contaminants are in your home's water? Get Leaf Home Water Solutions today. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make it safer and healthier. Leaf Home Water Solutions is offering a free in-home water test. Just visit leafhome.com/water to schedule yours. With results from their advanced digital testing, Leaf Home Water Solutions can design a whole home system and expertly install it in as little as one day. With Leaf Home Water Solutions, you can feel confident that each drop of water from every tap and appliance is cleaner and safer for you and your family. We can't live without water, but we can take actions today to make our family's water safer with Leaf Home Water Solutions. Schedule your free home water test today at leafhome.com/water and save 15% on all home water treatment systems. That's leafhome.com/water for your free home water test and 15% off. leafhome.com/water.
And SEC play. Got to get it figured out. So final score, 88-84. And again, Alabama's very good at what they do. We knew perimeter shooting was going to be an issue. We're down 5 at the break. We outscore them by 1 second half. We lose by 4. Chris Youngblood, huge night for him. 7 of 11. All of them 3-point baskets. 23 points for him. Sears, you know he'd go for around 20, get 17. Grant Nelson with 15. I thought they really hurt us on the kind of pick and roll action. Sometimes he would hedge the screen. And we adjusted a little bit, but they still found a little bit of success with it in the second half. But, man, in that first half, we're playing man-to-man defense. They were able to get him unimpeded to the rim. Aiden Holloway with a dozen off the bench. You know, Alabama's a great team. I still think we're a really good, possibly great team too. But, you know, guys, it took 38 from Josh Hubbard to keep us in his ballgame. Claudell Harris had 8, had a really big 3 when we needed it the most. Michael Nwoko just 7. Cam Matthews 4. Guys, he only took 2 shots. We've got to find a way to get Cam Matthews going again. It has not been a good stretch for Cam Matthews. And, again, I don't know if it's just a matter of people are denying the basketball, but we have him play the point forward so often, and he's not exactly a guy that's going to be able to just kind of take it down the lane consistently. I mean, that's just kind of how life works. But, you know, Cam is kind of the bread and butter of this team. I think everybody kind of sees it for what it is. But, man, you look at the last 3 ball games, not been great. So we play Tennessee, right? And you were a nightmare that ended up being, that Tennessee game. Like, we all kind of saw for what it is. 2 points. South Carolina, 0 points. Alabama, 4 points. We have got to find a way to get Cam Matthews going. If we're going to win these big games, we're going to upset somebody or even beat a contemporary that's ranked in the top 15, Cam Matthews is going to have some offensive production. We know it. And it's not just him. I mean, everybody's aware of who he is. He is the emotional leader of this team. RJ Melendez got a little bit banged up. Just had 3 points on the night. When he went down, I didn't think he's coming back, to be honest with you. And he came back, and the crowd gave a tremendous ovation for him. But think about this. And, of course, there's always the dark cloud, right, in the clear blue sky otherwise. But it took a career night from Josh Hubbard for us to kind of stay with Alabama. And it's a game that we arguably should have won, right? I mean, Keyshawn Murphy went for 18 points. We're not even in a position to be in a one-basket game without him. It's true. Your second leading scorer, and of course, you hate it so bad for the kid. He gets down there and has a chance, and he blew it. You know, the guy next to me said he thought there was contact. I don't know if I agree with that. I think we just mishandled it. But it is what it is. So now we got to look ahead and get ready to go play Missouri. This Missouri team, again, you know, they're a team that gets after it a little bit now. So let's take a look and see how the Tigers have gotten to this point. So you're 16-4 overall, 5-2 in the conference. They're 15-0 at home, and just 1-4 away from Missouri Arena. One true road win, three losses, and one on a neutral court. They lose to Memphis in Memphis, 83-75. So there's an opponent in common. It was the first regular season game back on November the 4th. They get by Howard by 15. They slip by Eastern Washington by just 7. And then blast Mississippi Valley 111-39. They get Pacific 91-56. Blow out Pine Bluff 112-63. Not necessarily a great, great non-conference slate. They get Lindenwood by 20. They slip by Cal in the SEC-ACC challenge, and they get that game by 5. I don't know if you've kept up with the Golden Bears this year. But big win, the old Kansas-Mizzou rivalry. One of the things for a long time people said wasn't going to be played anymore after Mizzou joined the SEC. But Missouri, 76-67 win at home over then number one Kansas. From there, it's a win over LIU, so maybe they're kind of figuring some things out here. They win by 27 in that game. They get Jacksonville State by just 11, excuse me, and then they lose in St. Louis to Illinois. I think it's a good place to have that game, don't you? I think so. They get Alabama State, 82-75. So a lot of swacks on this one. They lose by, goodness, 16 at Auburn, and they get LSU 83-67. And listen, LSU is not the LSU of old. They get Vanderbilt at home 75-66, so 9-point win there. And then they go to Florida, their one road win of the year, and they nip the number four Florida Gators by 1 point. And they get Arkansas at their place 83-65. Lose at Texas 61-53, and then beat Ole Miss 83-75. So, again, you look at some of these games, and it's like, yeah, I'm not really sure about this, but all of a sudden you get a little bit deeper into the month of January, and some cool things have happened for them. So this is a team that's certainly capable of coming to Mississippi State and winning, though they have not been a great road team. This is not a team that we can take lightly. Bulldogs, of course, need to win in the worst way. Let's look inside the numbers a little bit here. Kind of see what kind of team these guys have been. Averaging 83.2 points a game, giving up 69. That's always nice. Outscoring opponents by just over 14 points per game. Shooting 48% from the floor. So, you know, pretty good proficiency when it comes to offense. One of the better offensive teams in that regard that we've seen so far. Shooting 37% from beyond the arc. And it seems that everybody in recent weeks has found a way to get hot against us from beyond the arc. Shooting 72% from the free throw line. That's always a factor in these tight games. Rebounding, not necessarily been a strong suit for them. Out-rebounding opponents by just 2, pulling down about 35 boards a game. Handing out about 14 assists per game, allow 11.5. Turned it over, though, 221 times, but they forced 301. So that's a margin of plus 4 for the Tigers. Points off turnovers, about 19 a game, giving up about 12. 202 steals against 129. 61 blocks, not a huge number. Allowed 63. Yeah. So that's an important aspect of things. And we'll get look at some individual numbers here now. Tamar Bates, 13.5 points a game. Not necessarily the most skilled of rebounders. Mark Mitchell, though, has been pretty good for them, for sure. You got to get to the line a lot, too. 126 free throws attempted, averaging 13.1 points a game, 18 blocks on the year, pulling down right at 5 rebounds. Caleb Grill, 12.7 points per game, pulling down about 3.5 boards. Anthony Robinson, the second, 10.2 points per game, 69 total rebounds. Nice. So four regulars in double figures. And it looks like they play, you know, look at the numbers here, about 8 deep, sometimes 9 deep. And they played 20 games, and They got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 players that have played 19 or more games, and then a handful more, just a couple off, right? And so they're going to rotate a lot. They're going to try to stay fresh. I don't know that fatigue has really been an issue with us, except that overtime game against Ole Miss, and even that's a game that we won. But they're going to kind of stretch our depth a little bit. And, of course, Delquan Warren starting to get a few minutes every now and again, too, at the point. Good to see that. Thought he did a couple of good things against Alabama. And I know we put him on the floor against Ole Miss, and defensively, pretty relentless in that respect. But, this is a team that's pretty well balanced. And it's a team, too, that obviously knows how to get out and score a little bit. We're going to have to do some things in transition offensively for ourselves to kind of make this a ball game. I do expect to win the game, and maybe that's the homer in me coming out, but that's where we are. I think Mississippi State has responded well from losses most of the time this year. It hadn't been a ton of them, but we've come out and played hard after a loss. And I think that you're going to see State at home. It is an earlier tip. Hopefully we'll have a capacity crowd. I know all the tickets have been accounted for. But, we need a raucous environment. And what a great night it was in Hump, even with the loss. I think our fans are doing really a great job to be a part of all of this. And it was a lot of fun. Sat right, 2 rows behind the Alabama bench with my buddy Daniel Benfield. And we had a good time. Appreciate the opportunity to go and cheer for the Bulldogs. And everybody that turned out, man, you did your part. You did. I can tell you there were times that Alabama looked a little bit rattled. But that's a mature team, and they were able to kind of navigate. And I can tell you they were elated to win the game. And, watching those guys after the turnover, when Josh turned it over, and you hate that in a career game, but that's kind of a defining moment for you. They were walking off. Those guys were – there were smiles on their faces walking to the bench for those final few seconds. And a lot of celebration. And they earned it. We talked about, we missed a layup. You got to make winning plays. And that's how life works. You have to go out there when it's time to execute. And we talk to people, it's coaching. Guys, coaching's got to put you in good position. We were in a position to win that game, and we didn't do it. Now, one could argue maybe we shouldn't have been in that position. But, Alabama's the number 4 team in the country for a reason. I'm never going to excuse a loss. But I thought it was a great game. We just came on the downside of it. We've got to find a way to get over the hump, though. Have to. And, again, I still believe we're an NCAA tournament team. I believe we will go on a bit of a run here in the month of February and set ourselves up to be a nice seed in the NCAA tournament. And, of course, at that point, it all boils down to matchups. You just never know how things are going to work. But in no way should anybody be down on Chris Jans, down on Keyshawn Murphy, down on Mississippi State men's basketball. We are a very, very good team. And I think we're probably a minute or two away from maybe taking that next step. Need to get a win tomorrow, for sure. All right, time for today's top 10 list. As always, brought to you by closewithblair.com. That's C-L-O-S-E with Blair, B-L-A-I-R. Blair is my friend, your friend, our collective friend in the mortgage industry. They don't tell you that when you're kids. One day you're going to need somebody to help you navigate through a very complicated process. Don't overthink it. Okay, there's a lot of people, I want to show up around. There's no point shopping around, okay? I'm just going to tell you, I'm just going to shoot you straight. Best thing to do is to work with a seasoned professional. Get Blair Chandler's 24 years of expertise and know-how working for you to get you to the closing table. Perhaps the dream of home ownership has eluded you in the past. Well, Blair is a guy that can get things done. You don't stay in any industry 20-plus years by accident. It's true. Unless you get into college coaching, it's like you can stay forever. But understood, Blair is one of us. He rides the wave of emotion with the Bulldogs just like you and I do. He's got a place here in town, a season ticket holder in multiple sports. Give him a call today at 601-500-2344, 601-500-2344. So no matter if you're looking for your first home, your next home, or your retirement home, look no further than Blair Chandler at closewithblair.com. And get you to the closing table when so many others can't. Okay, they recently wrapped up the fire aid benefit. The tragedy that we've had out in California. A lot of people just absolutely decimated from this. You know, loss of life has been tremendous, but loss of property. And in many respects, you know, for many people, a loss of things that are irreplaceable. And that, I don't just mean material things. You know, there's just so much that happens, just kind of starting over with life, that, you know, some of you have experienced that. So, you know, some musicians got together and did the Fire Aid event. I thought we would do the best songs from the Fire Aid event that I've seen. And some of these bands, you know, I appreciate all of them for their contributions, even the ones that I don't like. Anybody that is willing to go out there really at their own expense and put together a show to help other people is worthy of our praise and our respect. And so, again, there's some bands that I do not like that performed, and we're not going to talk trash about that or them. Glad that they committed themselves, you know, to kind of help out. So I'm going to run through what I think were the best ones that I've seen, you know, and again, I mean, you had Billie Eilish and Earth, Wind & Fire and Katy Perry and Little Baby and Olivia Rodrigo and Sting was there, Tate McRae. I mean, it's just, there are a lot of people, you know, from a lot of generations that got together. So here are my 10. Number 10, and maybe we should do, I've had people that have sent me, said, hey, Steve, you got to do Jelly Roll, and I'm happy to send you my 10. Well, that's not quite how it works, but we got to do Jelly Roll at some point. Maybe we'll do them next week sometime. But Jelly Roll, just a couple songs. I'm Not Okay is our number 10 track today from Jelly Roll. And one of the things that I've shared with you guys before is a lot of people will tell you, hey, it's okay to not be okay. And it is for a short time. It's not okay to stay not okay. There are some things that happen in life that are absolutely traumatic, and you don't know how you're going to make it through it, but you can if you choose to. There are some things you never get over. You just kind of get on with it. And so I encourage you again, as always, if you're a person that feels like you're stuck, you got a little something grinding in your gears, maybe you feel like that life is ending for you, dial 988 and speak to somebody. Whether you're thinking about hurting yourself or somebody else, dial 988 today. And if texting is the better option for you, then text 988. There is help available for you. All right, number 9, I always dig this. You know, I love Dr. Dre. I do, and, you know, I've watched Straight Outta Compton more times than, you know, that I would probably want to admit, because I loved it so much. I was an NWA fan from the beginning, and, yeah, I get it. Dr. Dre was trying to make it as a DJ before all that. I get all that stuff. But he is a Cali guy through and through from the CPT. So, it's interesting. This is a really cool one. If you haven't seen it, it's Anderson .Paak and Sheila E. Still got a crush on her. And they did some songs together and did a couple of with Dr. Dre. They did Still D-R-E, but we're going to go with California Love. Shout out Tupac. Number 8, Alanis Morissette was there. Just a couple songs for her. And again, everybody just kind of did a couple things, right? And some were hits, and some were a little more recent, and some were kind of California-centric. But Alanis Morissette got up, and I remember when Alanis was trying to make it kind of like a Tiffany or a Debbie Gibson. Some of you have forgotten that. You know, she was a Canadian teen heartthrob type artist. And then, of course, she comes to the United States and kind of breaks through as an alternative rocker. Many of you ladies, the theme song of your life is You Ought to Know, and I think you ought to get over it. But here we go. It's Thank You at number 8 from Alanis Morissette. Number 7, I love this song. I absolutely love it. I loved that A Star Is Born was great. And then the remake with Bradley Cooper, the fact that he sang those songs to me gives it so much more authenticity. He's not just some handsome, rugged, good actor. It was great. But probably the endearing track, and it gets me emotional sometimes when I hear it. Like, that's when you know, like, somebody is emoting and really giving what they feel and eliciting emotion from their listener. And that's Lady Gaga's Always Remember Us This Way. It's just incredible to think about. You know, when the bands won't play and the crowds are all gone, this is how I remember us. At the beginning of every story, every great story, there is kind of the story of becoming us, right? When it's all kind of awkward and you're figuring each other out and kind of how it all fits together, and you struggle at times. And you may not struggle with the relationship, but you may struggle navigating life until you kind of find some solid ground. And that's kind of what that song reminds me of, is after all of this is over, after all of the, you know, the fame and all that kind of stuff is over for Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper and those characters, it's like, hey, this is what I remember. It's not going to be the big stuff, right? And that's the thing that I think about too. Like when Danny was in New Mexico, it wasn't going to rock shows and it wasn't going to ball games that I missed, because I still did that stuff. It wasn't the same without her. But what I missed is being able to curl up at night, put on Netflix, and just kind of be a couple. That's what I miss the most, right? And those are the times now that I appreciate the most, right? It's not all this other stuff. It's when I can just kind of put the phone down, put it on the charger, and watch Big Bang Theory reruns or whatever we're watching. And those are the things. Those are the things you miss. All right, number six, and one of the reasons this is a little bit lower is because it wasn't a Stevie Nicks solo track, but if you have seen the online version out there, it's really good. And not that Stevie ever does anything bad. I mean, she's just a legend. But it's Landslide, and I think it's very apropos considering. You knew the Red Hot Chili Peppers were going to be involved in this, as they should have been. They did Danny California, they did Californication. But I recently saw an interesting interview with Anthony Kiedis that when he wrote Under the Bridge, that he didn't think it was a Chili Pepper song. He didn't. And he kind of performed it for John Frusciante, and then John kind of found the guitar part for it, and they went and played it for the rest of the band. Everybody's like, this is it. This is the song we've been waiting for. And if you know the earlier catalog, you know, like True Men Don't Kill Coyotes and things like that, this is not at all. Like Blood Sugar Sex Magik is a legendary album. I think Under the Bridge. I have Anthony Kiedis' biography right here. I still haven't read it. But that's kind of what it's about. It's about recovery. And it's about being honest about addiction. So that's number five track, Under the Bridge from Red Hot Chili Peppers. Number four, one of my favorite bands of all time. Had a chance to see them live. Saw them with Government Mule. It was great. Saw much some other bands too, but to see them headline a show, super cool. It's Black Crowes, and we're going back to the Southern Harmony, and I'm going to mess it up. I know I am. Southern Harmony, and anyway, Musical Companion. It's Remedy, and it's so good to see Chris and those guys get along again and kind of get out there and perform for the fans. You know, we get so selfish and think, well, they should do it for the fans, you know. But, you know, we're not spending a year together with people that we don't like. There's a lot of bands that just aren't willing to do it. All right, number three. Flea and Anthony Kiedis actually came out and did some work with our number two artist. But before we get there, I get ahead of myself. It's Earth, Wind, and Fire. We jammed some Earth, Wind, and Fire today at baseball. Let's Groove, right? From 1982, I had that on 45. But September, everybody knows this track. It's such a happy song. Number two, and this is where Flea and Anthony came out and performed Higher Ground with Stevie Wonder. And I remember when they got ready to break the video on MTV, Kiedis was like, well, you know, Stevie Wonder's like, hey, I want you guys to cover my song. Of course, that wasn't the case. But I think the Chili Peppers do a great version. It's not as good as the Stevie Wonder version, but it's true enough to the original and true enough to the Peppers that people really dug it. But number one, and this was actually one of those songs that came out when I was in high school. And actually, remember when everybody could learn how to do videos and you automate and you put all these great pictures of your kids together? I made a video that made everybody in my family and my parents and the grandparents of my grandchildren come to tears, and I set it to Forever Young. It was a picture of all of my children, a lot of them when they were young. And they've all gotten older. These things tend to happen, you know, if you just keep on living, you know. But to me, it's like when I think about Mia getting accepted to Harvard, To me, she's still that little girl that would sit in her room and draw her girls. Like, she would get there and sketch out girls wearing different outfits. We all thought she'd be a fashion designer someday, you know? And I think about Ani, you know, how competitive he was. It's no surprise that he played college baseball. And, of course, Ian's on the president's list this semester at Mississippi State, obviously, and doing well, you know. And got some high praise from his criminology professor this week about a paper that he wrote. And the guy even said this is really well written. And as a guy that makes his living as a writer, it's nice to know that some of that has rubbed off on my children. And, of course, Audrey, you know, out in Palm Bay, Florida, just kind of living life and going to the beach all the time. And, you know, it just makes you so proud to see that, you know, I did not want to have lifelong dependents as children, you know. And I don't mean this to hurt anybody's feelings, okay, because I understand things happen in life kind of beyond your control. But I had somebody tell me this when I was much younger, and I've always remembered this. It says that, you know, people that don't raise their children get a chance to do it all over again when they get to raise their grandchildren. Does that make sense? So, like, if you don't raise your children to be independent, and some of you, even despite your best efforts, you have some children that maybe are not independent, you know. And so I'm not being critical of you, but there are some of you that know exactly what I'm talking about. Is if you don't raise your children to be, you know, well-sourced and well-grounded adults, there's a good chance you'll be raising their children too, you know. And so that's just kind of some words to live by there. And again, it's not a hard and fast rule. I know many grandparents just kind of step up when things happen, and I get that, okay? But I have always, in my life as a father, kind of navigated that. Is it one day you're going to leave me and your mom, right? And you're going to be independent and you're going to learn to take care of yourself. And when you leave here, you have to go find your own way in the world and find your own home and find your own life. Now, you're always welcome to come back here temporarily. If something happens in your life, you always have a home to return to kind of lick your wounds and then venture back out into the world. But the expectation is for you to go on and make your own legacy and build your own life. I didn't want the big house out in the country with four mobile homes in the front yard for all my kids could be there under my feet. And I have people all the time that say, man, do you hate that you guys are so far apart? Yes, I do. But I also love the fact, too, that my children have found their own lives. And their lives don't just center around me. You know, I'm getting older. You know, at some point, maybe some of them will move back home. And I don't want anybody to do it for that reason. I want them to do it because it's what they think is right. All right, next segment of the show brought to you by Campus Bookmart, a Starkvillian institution. Man, I love Campus Bookmart. I have for a long time. You should, too. If you're looking for Mississippi State merchandise, and I know you are, look no further than Campus Bookmart. Next time you're in town, go by and see their smiling faces. You may even get a complimentary hug. I always do. Maybe it's just me. But nevertheless, Miss Kathy Brown does an amazing job there, keeping that place absolutely stocked with the latest and greatest in Mississippi State merch. What are you looking for? Apparel, gift ideas, ways to detail out your fan cave, your office. You can find them there at Campus Bookmart. If you can't make it to town, or perhaps game day is a difficult shopping day for you, visit them on the World Wide Web, courtesy of Al Gore's internet at campusbookmart.net. And by being a loyal listener to this show, we'll give you a phrase that pays. That's BSR, which stands for Beautiful Steve Robertson. That gets you free shipping on all orders over $75. Any order less than 75 bones, absolutely incomplete. All right, Mississippi State women, as you guys know, had the unfortunate result at Missouri, and our reward for that is to go take on LSU, the number 7 in one poll, 5 in another. Kim Mulkey has the Tigers playing well, and you know, we beat them last year in Starkville, and we're pretty jacked up about it, but yeah, it's a different deal going on the road and playing in this neck of the woods when it comes to basketball. I would say it is probably more difficult to win on the road in basketball than maybe any other sport in the Southeastern Conference. And I don't really know why that is, but that seems to be the truth, right? I mean, when you a big road win in men's or women's basketball is so incredibly important. And I think a lot of it's just because the net, you know, it just means so much to be able to win those games on the road and you kind of get things rolling again, you know? I mean, it's just kind of how it works, you know? But nevertheless, this is an LSU team that has scored a lot of points. And the Maravich Assembly Center is where a lot of dreams have gone to die. The LSU Tigers, 22-1 overall, 7-1 in conference. They've won two in a row. They're 14-0 there at the Maravich Assembly Center, 4-1 in true road games, and 4-0 on a neutral floor. Again, opened up with the, 95-44 win over Eastern Kentucky. I mean, this non-conference schedule, not always the greatest. They blast Northwestern State, Charleston Southern, Murray State, Troy, Tulane. They do play Washington in the Baja Marhoops Pink Flamingo Championship. Narrowly escaped there 68-67 down in Nassau, Bahamas. And then they get NC State, and then they absolutely drill NC Central 131-44. Yeah, how's that? That's a hand and a half for you. They take on Stanford, you know, in the SEC ACC Challenge, and win that game in overtime by 6. So that's an impressive home non-conference win, even though Stanford wasn't ranked at the time. Then they blast, you know, in-state opponents, Grambling, UL Lafayette. They get Seton Hall up in the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut, if you're familiar. And then they go to UIC. And that, you know, listen, you sleep on that, but Illinois-Chicago is pretty solid mid-major most years. And they take down Albany. And there's a little town between Hammond and Baton Rouge spelled the same way. It's not Albany, though. It's Albany. Yeah. They get into conference play. They go to Arkansas, and Arkansas has really struggled this year. They win 98-64. And remember last year, Auburn beat LSU. And then Auburn goes down there, and they're a much different team this year. And it's another competitive game, but LSU wins by 10, 73-63. They then host Tennessee. They slip by the then-ranked 16th Volunteers, Lady Vols, nearly pulled this thing off. That's actually in Knoxville. And the Tigers win 89-87. Vanderbilt, you know, hey, you know, it kind of is what it is, but a six-point win there, and then they go to Gainesville. And again, I'll never understand, how is Florida bad at anything with the resources they have, the recruiting footprint they have? They should never have these, you know, seasons of wither, but they do. On the women's basketball side, things are just not good. They get drilled by LSU 80-63. It's always nice when, you know, you go out there and you get your own, okay, come out to the game and support us, and you get beat significantly. And then they go to South Carolina and lose by 10. That game was postponed. It was supposed to be played on Thursday. Ends up being a Friday game. That's the game where they have the DJ got suspended. I think we're a little bit sensitive. Just me. Maybe you've noticed. And then LSU takes on Texas A&M. They win 64-51. And then a barn burner of a game last night, Thursday night, LSU wins 107-100 against Oklahoma. We're well aware the Sooners are a good team. We've beaten them. One of state's best wins of the season. And now we get ready to play at 1 p.m. on Sunday. And if you're in the greater Baton Rouge area, we encourage you to turn out. You can go to church and go by and get some hot dogs there at the Maravich Assembly Center. The kids would love to go, mom and dad. But I'm expecting to lose this game. And that's no disrespect to anybody. That's just kind of how things are. LSU is just playing at a different level than we are right now. Nobody's expecting us to win down there. And if we do, how great would that be? But this LSU team gets up and down the floor, averaging almost 89 points per game, outscoring opponents by 25. Yeah. Shooting 47%, which is a really good percentage of women's basketball. 32% from beyond the arc, only giving up 36% from the floor, and about 27% from the perimeter. 74% free throw shooting, good team. Out-rebounding opponents by right at 15 per game. Playing good team basketball, too. Dishing out almost 16 assists per game, allowing just 11.8. So, differential of about 4 in favor of the Tigers. They do turn it over a little bit, but they also force some turnovers. So, they've turned it over 338 times. 428 for their opponents. And again, the quality of the non-conference competition wasn't great outside of that Stanford game. It's not in their favor. The opponents have a turnover margin of plus 4. So maybe that's something we could do. We'll see how it goes. 235 steals for them, 172 for their opponents. 96 blocks, which is a lot of blocks, about at 4.5 per game. Not going to be a perimeter game, I don't think, for us. You know, I think we've got to make some plays inside to even have a chance this thing. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But, not a game that we're excited about. So we get into the individual numbers here. Flo-Jay Johnson, the daughter of the deceased rapper whose song was played. And, listen, I get it. You know, I mean, especially if you don't know, that's part of their post-game festivities. But apparently there was some glee. The DJ was like, you know, a little bit over the top. But she's averaging 20 points a game. Anissa Morrow averaging 18.7. Michaela Williams, 16.8. Kaylin Gilbert, 10.3. And after that, it drops off fairly significantly. But this team has some measure of depth, but they only have five players that have played all 23 games and only three players that have started all 23 games. Samaya Smith appeared in 23, has started 15. She averages 5.7 a game. Jersey Wolfenbarger. Do you know many Wolfenbargers in your life? She plays every game, too, and started just 7, averaging 5.4 points a game. It's an interesting roster. But as long as Kim Mulkey is there, and again, what a great, great hire from Scott Woodard to be able to go pull that off. You know, they go get Brian Kelly from Notre Dame, and you get Kim Mulkey to come in from Baylor. It just kind of goes to show you they've got a real vision at LSU. You'll get Jay Johnson from Arizona. And so, you know, they're major sports there. I guess Matt McMahon wasn't a Power 5 coach. But, you know, by and large, they're going big fish hunting and winning. And then they're winning on the fields and courts of play. And so it's nice to be able to have those kinds of resources. But, of course, Kim Mulkey is a Louisiana girl, played for Louisiana Tech. So it's kind of like going home to her. And I know she's a bit irreverent at times. I think I've shared with you guys before. When we beat Baylor to advance to the Final Four, she could not have been nicer to me. And there were some people, you know, in the media that were kind of goading her a little bit. And so I waited afterwards and spoke to her, you know, just me and the SID there. She couldn't have been nicer. And so my personal experience with her doesn't really mirror kind of what you see in post-game. And she's a person, too, that's going to speak what's on her mind. I respect it. Even when you're wrong, I respect people that are willing to say what they believe, even if I don't agree with it. I am very much a First Amendment advocate. And it's so interesting. There are people are like, hey, well, that's offensive. Well, you know, it's non-offensive speech doesn't need protection. The First Amendment was created so we can speak our minds. And so I think you should speak your mind, too. I think it also is a pretty good indicator of your level of intelligence sometimes, too. Like, you can speak your mind, and sometimes people put their foot in their mouth because they go out there and say something incredibly stupid, even if they believe it. And I respect their right to do that, too. Matter of fact, I encourage it because it lets me know who I shouldn't hang around with. But, this is going to be a very, very challenging ball game for us. I do expect us to lose the game. And, again, that's not indicative of anybody connected with Mississippi State. LSU is just simply on a different level. Now, State will be back at Humphrey Coliseum on Thursday against Arkansas. And then we'll have an opportunity to have Alabama here. That's two winnable games, Arkansas and Alabama, both in Humphrey Coliseum. It's going to be Thursday, February 6th, and then Sunday, February 9th. You know what happens the next weekend? We play college baseball. So let's get ready to jump into some of that. Final segment of the show brought to you by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Love the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. I've stayed there. Some friends of mine have stayed there. We absolutely love the place. We plan to do it again. If you're looking to bring a large group to town, the Stark Vegas Clubhouse is the place for you. Be the linchpin in your own family in organizing this trip. Everybody says it. We got to get together more, and then you never do. And then one day you look back and say, man, I wish we would have packed the car a little bit more. I wish we would have taken the big trip, taken the big vacation together. Hey, guys, this isn't an expensive trip, and it's one of your favorite cities in the world. How many times have you come up here on game day, and then maybe your favorite restaurant's a little bit too busy? Maybe it's a little bit too people-y in your favorite shops? Maybe come up here midweek, take some vacation days, and come up here and spend a couple of days in Starkville and go frequent all your favorites. How cool is that? Now, Google the Stark Vegas Clubhouse, and when you do, their Facebook page will pop up. You can peruse through all the amenities available to you and your guests. You'll see pictures of the full-service kitchen, the great living room area, the great back porch area, the fire pit, six bedrooms, soon to be three baths. You can hang out there, do all your tailgating there. It's just 5 minutes away from the Mississippi State campus. So incredibly convenient, just out there past the Highlands, tucked away kind of neatly in a very quiet area. We don't want you out there throwing a rager. It's just a chance for you to kind of get away from it all. So whether it's a couple's weekend, a family weekend, or perhaps a baby shower weekend, bachelorette weekend, I don't know what your needs are, but they can be accommodated by the Stark Vegas Clubhouse. Now, when you Google Stark Vegas Clubhouse, some booking options are going to pop up. You're going to see Airbnb, VRBO. You can go that route if you want to, but if you want to save some money, I can help you with that. Book through the Evolve website and use promo code BSR10. That's BSR10. Beautiful Steve Robertson, 10. Get you 10% off your stay. Just by listening to this show, you're saving money at the premier place to stay in the Golden Triangle. All right, we did have some baseball today, as you guys are aware. We'll give you some positives, some negatives. Kind of give some general observations today. Ace Reese is a dude. Okay, we have repeated that on this show. This is a guy that has all SEC, and if he can kind of handle things defensively, potentially All-American type numbers. That's what you could expect. Now, at times, the throw from third to first is a little bit of an adventure. That's something you got to think about. But this is a guy that's capable of hitting 20-plus home runs. He hit one today into the second level of the lounge to left center. Well, he's a left-hander, so you think the pull side's a right side. Guys, the wind is blowing out to right, and he pushed that bad boy about as deep as you can get it and keep it in the facility to left center. This guy's really, really good. He was, in my estimation, and the estimation of some around college baseball, State's biggest portal get. Through our fall ball scrimmages and our preseason scrimmages, he has been absolutely outstanding. You got to figure out, okay, does he stay at third? Do you move him to the outfield? I don't know. But his bat's got to be in the lineup every day. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. Steven Spoletta had a really nice hit today. Remember last year, he was kind of the hero of the fall, and it took him a little while to kind of acclimate. I love our depth at catcher. And one of the things that I love about it is it's kind of a different guy every day, right? People talk about, well, Steve, Ross Highfield's getting on base and stealing bases. Maybe he should hit leadoff. I think he strikes out a little too much to be leadoff guy. But, yeah, I expect a big year out of Ross. But Spoletta is the fourth-team catcher. And here he is banging balls off the wall. This guy's got some pop. Also a left-handed hitter, too. Jackson Owen has been on a torrid pace since returning to campus. And I don't know that I thought he had this in him. And I'm just going to say it for what it is. Now, he was a National Defensive Catcher of the Year. And I worry a little bit about the running game a little bit with him. Good receiver. Blocks things up really well. You can bounce that breaking ball up there and he'll keep it in front and stop people from taking the extra base. But, when you look at what he's done offensively, he got some difficult decisions to make. And then there's steady Joe Powell, just kind of doing everything kind of well, not really jumping out ahead. I think he's at this point he's better at managing a running game. Ross Highfield is the best athlete of the catchers. Now, I think even the catchers would tell you that. Now, Jackson Owen looks like a different player than he did last year. I mean, just physically looks like a different player. So it's not a big surprise to me that he's been able to find some power after he's kind of committed himself to kind of getting bigger and better physically. But I think you could see Ross Highfield at a few different spots. I really do. We had one interesting deal today. We had kind of a ball that fell in no man's land. And it's a center fielder's ball. And you got short, you got Dylan Cup and Sawyer Reese both sprinting out there, backs to the diamond, chasing it. And then you've got Mikey O'Brien running in trying to get it. Well, nobody gets it. And it's the center fielder's ball. It is. And I don't know who called him off, but I need my center fielder to take charge there. Now, rather than pout about it, Mikey comes up the next time up and then, you know, pulls one through the right side that kind of opens up an inning for us. You know, moves a runner around. Next thing you know, we're in a scoring situation. But I like what we're seeing out of Dylan Cup, and I think we almost take it for granted. You know, we've gotten used to good shortstop play here the last couple of years. And I think Dylan Cup's a guy that you're going to look at one day and say, man, I'm so glad that kid played here. And still doing a good job with the bat. That was always the concern coming in, even from MLB scouts, is like the hit tool is just not where we think it should be. He is a first-round defender and probably 10th-round type hitter. Well, he's starting to put it all together. And I think, again, you're going to be really, really, really confident when he's on the mound, on the field, and which will be pretty much every day. I think Sawyer Reed's probably your starting second baseman right now. He's just a ball player. You know, a veteran, seasoned guy, can kind of handle the nuance of playing middle infield. It's a little more complicated than people think. You know, having to kind of work everything around the shortstop and figuring out who takes that ball up the middle. There's a lot of communication. I think having an elite defender like Cup gives you the opportunity to kind of move some people around at second. Ethan Pulliam, competing very hard there, hit an absolute tank today to left. So we have some depth, and we've talked about that on shows recently. But how many times last year did we basically had you know, three bodies for two spots, and from time to time, one guy would step up and play well and then kind of regress, and then we'd plug another guy in. But we kind of had to stick with it at times. I don't think you have that this year. I think, again, competition makes everybody better. And when you know the guy behind you is as good and as capable as you, well, you got to stay on top of that. And I think that's a big part of things with when you got Pulliam that's got SEC starts and hits under his belt. You got Sawyer Reeves, a guy that's a salty veteran from the Citadel. And Gatlin Sanders has kind of worked some at third here as of late too. And that'll be an interesting dynamic too. What do we do with Gatlin Sanders? He was one of the leading hitters in the fall. But, you know, Nate Chester's kind of been that utility guy, but Gatlin's kind of working in that same capacity. You know, we'll see how things go. You know, first base, Reed Stallman hit another monster shot to right today too. And I'm beginning to kind of wonder, this Noah Sullivan, Reed Stallman thing, do we platoon the DH? Because we can get production out of both of those guys. Now, left on left is always tough because you don't see it all an awful lot. But you start thinking about that. You start Reed Stallman against a right-hander. And then the next time you get through the order, if there is an issue, you know, if the splits aren't good, well, then you could put Sullivan in. You know, I don't think you have to simply just pick one guy. I think you can use them. And Reed Stallman is an absolute specimen. This is a guy that can hit the ball a long way. And with Hunter Hines, at first, you're not going to take Hunter out of lineup. But Hunter really took some steps forward defensively last year. That was the knock on him 2 years ago. Now, Reed Stallman, even at this point, I would say is a little more polished as a first baseman. He stretches for the ball a little bit better. I think he looks a little more natural at first base. So you've got options there too. And so, again, you kind of work around this thing and you begin to think, okay, you know, what do you end up doing in center field? Well, do you end up putting Ace out there? I don't know. Do you put Highfield out there? Is Michael O'Brien out there? Is Bryce Chance out there? Do you put Stallman in left? You know, Nolan Stevens, a guy that we've kind of just, you know, hey, except that he's going to be the right fielder. And I just tell you, the offensive numbers so far in spring training from Nolan have not been great. And so I think that's a guy right there that needs to have a good 10 days before we get ready to go play a game. You know, 2 weeks from tonight, we'll be recapping the season opener. And so I think Nolan has got to get some things going. I mean, you want him out there. It's another big left-handed power bat. But you begin to kind of wonder a little bit too. You know, with all the depth that we have, I can't promise you anything. Another guy that I think needs a good 10 days is Carson Ligon. The breaking stuff is good. The off-speed stuff is good. The fastball's been a bit of an adventure. Now, he throws really, really hard, but it's kind of a violent delivery. It's not as fluid as I'd like for it to be. And at times, the release point is a little bit all over the place. So he'll throw 197 and it's up, and they'll come back at 96 and it's low. You know, and guys like that that overthrow at times have a tendency for the fastball to flatten out. We want to make sure we've got some cut to that thing or some downward movement or some rise. And when you overthrow, at times you lose that. And so Ligon's a guy that is in competition for a weekend spot. You know, but based on what I saw today, that first inning, you know, they were barreling him up pretty good. And again, I think that's part of it too. When you're trying to establish the fastball and you're not getting the movement required to get the ball beat in the ground or get some soft contact, it's something you got to consider. I thought Pico was really good today. I feel pretty confident Pico's going to be one of your weekend starters. And then you kind of work through this thing. You know, what's the next couple of weeks look like? And I think the reason that Ligon and Pico have both been going on Fridays is ideally you're expecting them to be weekend starters and you're kind of preparing them for that. And so I think Carson's got to take a step forward here in these next 10 days. Now, he's probably a starter against Manhattan, and that's the thing you begin to think about too, is like the quality of competition probably shouldn't challenge him. But the strike zone could, right? And so you don't want to get in a situation where you lull yourself into a false sense of security. You start thinking, well, you know, he's 3-0, and we're getting ready to wrap up non-conference play, and so we'll stick with him. You know, as long as he's winning, you want to stick with him. I just think there's a game within the game. That ball-to-strike ratio has got to be tremendous. Now, he's going to get a lot of swing and miss because the breaking stuff is elite. And he does have great velo. But the reality of it is when you get into the Southeastern Conference, if you can't throw three pitches for strikes, you're throwing batting practice. This is the reality of life. I love the bullpen pieces, though. And to be honest with you, when I think about last year, you know, we needed Cal Steven or Nate Dolm or those guys, Drangelo, to give us 6-7 innings. And then we turned it over to a bullpen. And we didn't have, you know, you say, oh, we had all these guys drafted. We didn't have a sure enough shutdown guy on the back end last year. Tyler Davis had some big moments for us. Tyson Harden had some big moments for us. But you did not have that big Brahma bull marching out of the bullpen and everybody in the stadium going nuts because they knew the game was over. You didn't have that element. I think Gavin Black could be that guy. You know, I think that's probably, you know, one of those things you guys were expecting too. And I remember when we signed him, some people were like, you know what, I just don't, we got to get him in a JUCO showcase. We bring him out there and he had good velo, but he had trouble keeping the ball down. Now, towards the end of the year, all of a sudden he finds a little bite. Parker works with him. We refine the delivery a little bit. He's kind of picked up where he left off. He had a really good summer. He had a good fall. He's looked so good so far in spring. I think that's an important aspect of this too. I think this bullpen, much like in 2021, and no, I'm not projecting us to go win an AFL championship, but I think what's interesting with this group is I think it's going to be one of those deals where you get, if you get four or five out of the starters, you've got enough depth in the bullpen to turn that thing over and let them kind of finish up for you. I think that, you know, how many times in 21, that's how you feel. It's like, hey, man, if we can get through the lineup twice with C-Mac, and turn it over to the bullpen and get it to Landon Sims, that's a dub. That's how it felt. And so I think that's an aspect of things that probably needs to be considered. You know, so I don't think you're going to have guys work deep in the games this year unless they just, you know, somebody just has a good week. I just don't think you're going to go out there, hey, we got to get seven out of Gerangelo. We got to get 7 out of Cal. I think last year the strength of the pitching staff was in the starters, and I think this year it's clearly in the bullpen. Luke Dodson has kind of been PO this year. I think it's a good thing, and I think he's developing. He was good last weekend, good again today. And how many times in our history have we pulled left-handed arms? Well, not very many. And of course, like, well, Steve, I want to see it on the field. Well, of course. And I think Luke is making a jump. And I think that's the guy you're going to be able to count on. Go out there and eat up a couple of innings for you. You know, Stone Simmons obviously is a guy that a bit of an X factor for us. We do expect him to factor in and throw major innings for State. Is that on the front end, middle, or back end? I don't know. You know, Noah Sullivan's a guy that can probably help navigate through some midweek games as a reliever and save some arms for the weekend. Robert Fortenberry is a very, very crafty, change of pace, left-hander. Originally from Marion County, Mississippi. His dad went to West Marion. I don't hold that against him. But he's a guy, too. Works down, works ahead. You like that about him, for sure. And probably the first guy to bullpen. Now, I've heard Bradley Lofton's done some good things. Now, we haven't seen him pitch yet on the weekends, but I'm hearing that his bullpens are coming along. So, again, anything you get from him is a bonus, but it's just a guy that had first-round talent. That could be a real X factor for you. And Chase Hungate has been absolutely outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. Could he be a setup guy? Could he be a closer? You need more than one, right? Because more times than not, you're going to play 4 games in a week. So hopefully you get enough separation in games. You're not so reliant on a closer. But when you get into SEC play, you're going to need more than one guy to close ball games out. And I think we're going to be in a lot of close ball games. I think the Hungate Black tandem excites me a little bit because last year, you know, it's like, Steve, what are we going to do? Oh, Tyler Davis. And remember, you guys were kind of like me. I don't know if we can trust him. And he comes out and he's born again hard last year under Justin Parker's tutelage. And I joke with him, I think it's the beard, you know. But again, you kind of work through this thing. Nate Williams hadn't pitched. Jacob Pruitt, we'll see him tomorrow. But Jacob's a guy, too, that's, you know, where does he factor in? You know, he's a guy that has started, has worked in middle relief, could even work some on the back end. And there's my guy, Grant. You know, he's as talented as anybody on the staff. Now, Ben Davis, we didn't see him much in the fall. Started on Monday, a little bit up and down. But this is a guy here that nobody's even talking about that could throw some big innings for you. You know, and so, again, he was a pitcher and a catcher. And how nice is it to have guys like that? And again, I'm just so excited about these young pitchers. You know, Dane Burns, Jack Gleason, Cade O'Leary, Ryan McPherson, Charlie Foster. Those guys are good enough to get you wins in a midweek and then save your elite arms and experienced arms for the weekend. That's a luxury we didn't have last year. And then there's JT Schnuer. You talk about it, this guy was 6'4", 215 pounds. He was good again today. Set the record at Pearl River Community College for wins in a season at 13. That guy's a winner. Where does he factor in? Same thing with Kevin Minnell today. And this is another guy that was a former weekend starter at Kansas State. And so I think it's important to kind of illustrate how all this stuff is kind of shaking loose for us. So the quality start this year, by definition, will be much different than last year. Because I just don't think you have a Cal Steven on the staff. Now, Pico's a guy that can probably get you 6 a game. You know, and you start thinking about that aspect of it. You know, Carson Ligon is a guy that has been a starter before, but not here other than a couple of midweek games. You know, he's a guy you start thinking, you know, can he get you 5? Well, he can, you know. But when you've got as many weapons available to us, you know, do you begin to kind of use him as an opener? Maybe he gets you through the order once, and if he's still in good shape, you keep riding him, right? That's an important aspect of this thing too. You know, it's just nice to have options that didn't exist for us last year. We got so many pitchers that are going to pitch this year. I mean, you know, years past, you'd have guys out there that, You know, they throw bullpens and then maybe throw, you know, an inning or two on a Johnny Holstaff day. I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think you've got enough young, capable arms to navigate through midweek without having to dip into the guys that you want to throw in SEC play. And the fact now that you've got so many options out there, you don't have to just sit there and ride with somebody. And you know, basically you win Sunday a lot of times on Friday, right? When you get the quality start on Friday and maybe only have to use a pitcher or two, I mean, you don't want guys going nine. I mean, you really don't. I mean, you'd love that if you had to have it. But, you know, let's say you can get seven out of the starter and maybe somebody throws the eighth, somebody throws the ninth, then those guys come back and pitch on Sunday. But when you get that quality start on Friday, well, then you've got more options on Sunday. You know, how many times have we seen that? We talk about managing a weekend, kind of navigating through all of that stuff. You know, when the less pitchers you throw on Friday, the more you have available to you on Sunday. And so that's an important aspect. That's why I think Pico is probably your Friday night guy right now. I think he is probably the starter that you probably have the most trust in. And look at the leg and stuff too. You know, it was rough at times, right? You know, he gives you a good inning against the Air Force, and then he has a terrible outing against Austin Peay. Only throws 12 pitches, gives up 3 hits and 3 runs in a game that, guess what, we lost 13-10. He comes back against Georgia Southern, goes 2 2/3 of an inning, gives up a couple runs. Comes in against Southern Miss, goes 1 inning, 3 hits, 4 runs, 2 walks, a strikeout. And so the first four just weren't great. Then we go down to Biloxi, and he plays against UNO, and actually does a pretty decent job. We win that game 2-1. You may recall we had to walk that thing off. But, you know, Carson gives up the run early, but then settles down and gives you 52 pitches, a pretty good baseball, and he gives you 3 innings. And you start thinking, hey, is that where we cap him? He pitches against LSU. He goes – 3 1/3 here in SEC competition in that middle game that we lost 9-8, but it wasn't Carson Ligon's fault. Carson Ligon gives you 3 1/3 innings here, 2 hits, did have a few walks there, 3 Ks to 3 walks, but 65 pitches and allows us to come back, and we nearly pull that thing off. So he did a nice job. You bring him in there to mop up, and next thing you know, you mount a comeback. The next thing you know, you go to College Station, Texas. He gives you an inning of perfect baseball and just 15 pitches. You go to Florida, had some walks there. You know, we started him and just thinking, hey, let's see what we can do here. He goes 2 1/3, he gives up a hit and a run. We get him out of there. That's a ball game. We lost 4-3. Tough. Get walked off there in that game. Play Ole Miss, similar situation. An inning and 2/3, a hit and a run, a couple of walks. 35 pitches, we lose that game 10-9, you know. Alcorn State, you know, he goes an inning there, no hits, no runs. We go to Vanderbilt, an inning and a third, no hits, no runs. You get Ole Miss again, goes an inning and 2/3 of hitless baseball. Alabama gives up 1 run on 1 hit in an inning and 2/3. And that's the game we lost, 10-5. He didn't have a good outing against Arkansas, but was good against Virginia, pretty good. I mean, all things being considered. You know, the game was over at that point. But my point being is that I think you look at him through a different lens. I think you start thinking, hey, if we start Carson and bring him in as, you know, the flamethrower, 96-97 right-hander, and so then they're going to stack that order with left-handers. Do you pair him with Robert Fortenberry? And this is a guy that pitched big innings too. And maybe Ligon gets you through the order once, maybe gets you 3, possibly 4, and you pair him with Fortenberry, the lefty. All of a sudden he comes in and chews up those lefties and maybe gets you 3-4 innings himself and then turns it over to maybe a Gavin Black. You know, I think that's an aspect of this, or Hungate. I think that's how you have to approach this, because you can't go out there and just assume that Nate Dome, Cal Steven, Gerangelo, are going to get you seven. Those guys aren't with us anymore. So managing the pitching staff this year is going to be completely different. And so that, to me, that makes sense. If you want to do the Carson Ligon thing, if you want to make him a starter, I think you got to pair him up with Fortenberry. To me, strategically, that makes the most sense. Because you know how hard he can throw. And when he's on, he's really good. I just don't know if he's the guy that's going to be able to get you through the order a third time. You know, maybe he can get you four, maybe five. You can push him. You know, he's finally healthy now. But, you know, you're not going to be able to go out there and walk kids and then remain on the mound for Justin Parker. So that's a part of this that I think has to kind of be understood by our fan base right out of the gate. Now, you know as well as I do, there's going to be some of these Facebook experts going to show up and be like, hey, this guy can only get three or four innings. Well, you remember back in 2013, for those of you that are longtime Bulldog fans, we kind of had the same strategy with the Fitz Ross Mitchell thing. And yes, I know the balls were different back then. But you start Fitz, and he gets you through the order once. If we're leading and he's doing well, you stick with him. And in the first sign of trouble, you bring in Ross Mitchell to go in there and chew up those lefties. I mean, it's a strategy as old as the game itself. And so I just think it's important for our fans to kind of understand before we even get into college baseball that you're not going to see starters with as long a leash this year. Number one, I don't know that you have the skill set to do it. But number two, when you have so many options in the bullpen, there's no need to do it. You don't have to ride a guy when he doesn't have it because you have so many guys out there. And a lot of these guys in the bullpen are former starters, like Kevin Minnell, right? And then not to mention, look at the numbers. Hungate put up starting pitching numbers last year and didn't start. He was the best pitcher on their staff at Virginia. And so when you begin to navigate through that, I want to make sure that we convey the proper expectation when it comes to this pitching staff. The pitching staff is going to be judged in its totality and not just on the length of the starts that we get from those weekend guys. And I still think Charlie Foster's a dark horse guy. I think you give him Tuesday nights the first month of the season, and you get into SEC play, and all of a sudden if you need to find somebody, it's kind of like the Connor Pilkington thing, right? Or the Hootie thing, right? You bring all of a sudden, you work that guy along for a month, and the next thing you know, you roll him in there on Sunday because, you know, you need a guy that can throw strikes. And I think that also gives Charlie a chance to kind of ramp up. But, you know, I wouldn't rule out the JT Schnuer thing. You know, there's just so many options now. And I think it's important. These aren't just names, right? It's one thing to look at the roster and say, well, we've got all these pitchers. We're seeing these guys pitch at Duty Noble, and we're seeing how effective they can be. You know, and it's never the same guy every day, you know. But when you've got so many guys in that bullpen that are capable of being long relievers, it gives you a lot of freedom on the front end. And so I think that's important to understand. Before we even take the field, if Carson Ligon, if you see that Carson Ligon is starting on that opening graphic, and I expect that may be the case, but I think when that happens, I think you need to understand we probably only need him to get three or four. And maybe he's the Saturday guy, maybe he's the Sunday guy. I'm not exactly sure at this point, but I think it's probably important to know that that's probably part of a package. Fair enough? All right, if you haven't done so, go to dutynoblebook.com. You can sign copies of The Dude. The Dude has been nominated for some pretty cool awards, too. And we're not going to put that out there. If we win something, we'll tell you. But, yeah, it's pretty cool to be recognized for that. And all my sports titles with that same URL, it's Flim Flam, Stark Villains, Alpha Dogs, Dogpile. And all those books are important for you if you're a Mississippi State fan, whether you read or not. You need to have those in your fan room, your fan cave. I hope that you read them. I do. I worked especially hard on them. But and also, When the Bottom Falls is there too. That's basically my memoir about what it took for me, what led me to seek a new way to live, and how I found a new way to live and been able to maintain, you know, sobriety now for over 33 years. So whether you're a person that deals with chemical dependency or not, it may be a book that you could enjoy. Now, we'd love for you to come float with us over at True Rest Float Spa of Starkville. I think we had we were booked up at 7 and booked up to 8:30 tonight. And so, 662-268-7601. You can speak to my lovely wife, Dana. She can answer any questions you have. If you're a person that just needs a break, or maybe you have anxiety or chronic pain, we may be able to help you too. And so maybe it's a great experience. It's an hour to yourself. And how often do we truly take an hour to ourselves? Well, Steve, my self-care, I just go lay in the bed, look at my phone, turn the TV on, and I've got the ceiling fan going, and there's just noise. Guys, that's not self-care. That's not taking care of yourself. That's not time to yourself. Sometimes you just need a minute. This is a different scenario completely. Gives you a chance to just kind of isolate, take some time to yourself, let your mind rest. That's something we really never do. And I had some floaters tonight. Guy told me he floats weekly. He is the best float I've ever had. He's been coming for months. He goes, I can't really explain why. I said, well, I think it's because now your mind has kind of begun to crave this and kind of said, hey, you know what? I'm used to this. Now I know what to do when I get in this environment. Be sure and come check it out. And we're wrapping up the most prolific month of writing in Gene's Page history this month. How about that? Yeah. More value for your subscription dollar than ever before that's ever been available anywhere. Right? How cool is that? So we're not slowing down. We're just picking up, right? So come by and check us out. And 30% off the annual subscription price right now. And, you know, that's a cool deal for you. Valentine's Day is coming up. And there's probably a Bulldog fan in your life that you love to be able to give the gift of Mississippi State Information. You're going to find more with us than anywhere else. Always will. Until next time, let's all live our lives in a way we make more friends than enemies, and people can see a difference in the way we live.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply, in-app only.